Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Rule the Roost podcast. I am your host, Raj Baines, which is always a signal that something has gone deeply wrong at some point, if I'm the first voice you hear. Seb isn't here. I think he now works in a cafe Nero in Bath. That's the impression I got from a text. So he may have just given up on the football industry as a whole. that giggle you can hear in the background is the one and only Jack Hussey, sat somewhere in a leafy park in central London, I'm led to believe. Is that right?
It's not too leafy. I mean, it's not one of the big parks in London. It's more just a little green space, which is a precious commodity when you work in the city parts. So it's
Green areas I'm aware of in London are sort of Primrose Hill, that park on the way to Pall Mall, and that little stretch of green stuff next to London Eye. Obviously, as the tourist that I am, they're the only places that I'll have ever have really heard of.
That's pretty much it, mate. The rest of it is just a grinding dystopia, so it's fine.
Perfect setting for this conversation, then.
Last
week, we weren't throwing our toys out the pram or anything like that. I'm sure we would have probably wanted to exercise this conversation earlier than fucking double down on it. Jack, you were away getting high in Amsterdam.
Getting high on life, to caveat that.
As I say, Seb was probably starting his career at Cafe Nero. There's probably some induction you've got to do or something before they let you be a barista.
Imagine if he has actually fucked it all off and become a barista.
Yeah. I think it's just a new way, an avenue for him to meet women during the day.
He's
writing his number on, he's actually pre-written his number on several napkins, and he's got them in his back pocket just to dish out under a coffee whenever he sees one.
He's still bringing the emoji game to IRL, so he'll sit out his stall, get his iPad out, have his coffee, have his tissues, everything like that, and then just get an actual aubergine out of his bag and rest it on the table. Give them a little wink and point to it every now and again, you know, as they walk past.
Yeah, it's actually a well-known sign for people in that subculture of the Bath dating scene. The man with the emoji in real life is what he's known, the aubergine man.
It's not like the milk tray. Remember those old... probably too young to remember the milk tray.
I do remember. They tried to bring it back just recently as well.
Just imagine Skeb like... scaling like, you know, kind of whatever tower blocks and just dropping an emoji on a bedside table, an emoji and aubergine, fuck them all over the place.
Like, let's pile into the football. I think the last time we spoke was before West Brom. I think the tone of the conversation was that you win that match and nothing really changes because Leicester had just beaten who had they just beaten?
Swansea.
Yeah, they just beat Swansea,
as well.
Oh yeah, Swansea essentially laid down and had whatever was coming to them done to them. And it was sort of everyone prematurely at that point. I still feel prematurely at that point was a bit overly happy with how that game went, because I still believe had we beaten West Brom, it would have been, you know, still same sort of thing. Pressure would have been cranked right back up, and you know, Old Trafford would have been even harder for them. But we did not beat West Brom. We conspired to only score once when we could have scored, you know, seven or eight times. And the rhetoric after that, the main sort of takeaway was that Tottenham had bottled the league and it had gone away from us, even though mathematically, of course, all it did was really stretch the possibility, in if we're being kind about it. In realistic terms, of course, it was sort of, you know, it was sort of chasing something that maybe wasn't there anymore. I think the players' faces maybe gave that away more than anything else, because they genuinely seemed a bit gutted. But how did you feel after the West Brom game? Because you disappeared out of the country before we could even talk about it.
Yeah, I think the West Brom game, it was irritating. It was annoying. I think what this whole period, I don't want to bleed over into Chelsea yet, but this whole period, the thing that's actually irritated me more than anything that Spurs have done, and you touched on it there, Raj, is the whole bottling it rhetoric. Is like, I will take it that, you know, we're a young, inexperienced side, and perhaps, you know, the momentum got the better of not just Spurs fans, but, you know, perhaps the wider community, sort of like the football reporting side of things as a whole. I think a lot of people maybe were like, you know what, Spurs are a young team, but they're not showing any inexperience. They're going into this head full of bluster and they're going to do it. And perhaps that was slightly overstated. You know, people got a bit overexcited by that. And, you know, we've had these little knocks. We've had little times like when the league was technically in our hands, so ahead of like West Ham and Arsenal.
Yeah, it's like I was saying, there's only one point in the season where you could argue that Tottenham were ever in a driving seat.
Yeah.
And it was before what is arguably has been our hardest game of the season. I mean, you can point to Dortmund away, but we put out a reserve team. Of all the losses we've had this year, of all the points we've dropped this year, I can't think of any occasion on which we've actually deserved to drop any points or lose anything. I think the hardest game we may have had was that Watford game we had away where they were in the middle of their fantastic run, and we still managed to beat them in the last second. So it's not as if any of these have been sort of bottling performances.
No.
I think the definition of bottle has been
maybe stretched. West Ham away, that's probably the only game I would say we didn't show up. And it did surprise me. It was a little bit Tottenham of old, if we're to look at it retrospectively.
Yeah, that would be my most disappointing performance. But it was, at the very same time, it was the hardest one we had. And
yeah,
we did have
definitely
the narrative against us. I mean, if anything, West Ham were as up for it, if not more up for it, than, again, Chelsea were. It's that same thing of, you know, them taking the London derby that bit more seriously and personal, just because it's us that are ahead of them, and, you know, they'd like nothing better than to stop us, and we've never been in that position before. So I don't think we appreciated perhaps how much it meant to them as players and fan bases to thwart us as it conspired it has done.
Well, and it's interesting though, isn't it, as well, Roger, when you look at it, like you look at the way these narratives are painted, you know, you go on a 4-5 game winning streak, it's seen as like a remarkable achievement. Spurs, in this instance, don't go on that said 4-5 game winning streak. It's seen as a bottling. And I don't think it is seen as a bottling.
No, I don't think anybody with any credence has called it bottling. I think it's been name calling by
a lot of silly people are calling it a bit of a bottling. Like,
yeah, but it's silly people, but nobody who you'd ever take any sort of importance in their opinion.
I don't know, mate. I know this is a bit this isn't genuine straw manning, but from the general media rhetoric I've seen, a lot of people have tried to play it out as in, when it mattered, Leicester did it and Tottenham didn't, and have kind of alluded to this bottling it theme. And I think the tone has been remarkably unfair to Spurs. I do, and I'm probably biased in saying that, but I don't think Tottenham have been, in these past few days, you know, Chelsea stuff aside, I don't think our season has been treated with the respect it deserves, really.
There's another story, though, isn't there? It's always that same thing that happens in sport when, you know, whether it's sort of Wimbledon and you see sort of the person who's played probably equally as well, if not just, you know, better, to get to a final, and they're given their 2-minute sort of peace at the end of the game. They're allowed to have their little bit of a cry, and then the winner comes in and, you know, everyone stands up. It's, you know, if you don't get there, you almost get more appreciation if you do well, but not go for the main prize. I mean, if you like West Ham, or you're a team that's a few places down and does a little bit better than you're supposed to have done, rather than going all the way and not getting quite there, the arc's given a much different precedent, because there's always another person to highlight, because
look at fucking Eden Hazard, the way the media's treated him the past few days, season he's had, that the fucking shite he's put out. The waste of
talent. He's not scored any goals in the Premier League until the past two matches.
The absolute contempt he's treated his talent and his club with this season. To be painted as some kind of a hero because he decided to show up in a big game.
I do want to put to bed the this bottling thing, though. I do appreciate that perhaps there was people were alluding to it, and there may have been one or two that had sort of my personal feeling was the people that I appreciate in the press and the people I would look to give an honest opinion more called it a missed opportunity than a bottling. I mean, there are people like Sid Lowe who I can count on one hand the amount of times they speak about Tottenham, because it's just not their jurisdiction, but, you know, they went out of their way to go, are people really saying that Tottenham have bottled this? I mean, like we said, there's one point this season where we could have... the league title was in our own hands, so to speak, but that was with quite a few games to play. There was obviously going to be one or two more kinks, and for the most part, we've been chasing it. I mean, it's only been sort of the past, 15, 20 matches, really? The second half of the season at most?
We've never been ahead of Leicester, have we?
No, where the sort of the league title's been a discussion to be had. The first part of the season, I think we just sort of, we were doing as well as we could and we were flying under the radar. And then it was when sort of everybody else fell away and it was only us and Leicester left that sort of we realised we were in a bit of a run. So I don't think we've treated the entire season as a title run. I think it just sort of, it became that, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, I wouldn't trade it in for the world. I'm not disappointed. Well, I am disappointed, but I'm not upset, so to speak, with sort of how it transpired, because I'm still very proud of our players and their efforts. But it's one of those things where you almost have to try and be more rational about it and not be too knee-jerk, because it's one of those where you can go a bit too far and you can make too much of it. I mean, there's a saying in rugby league that you have to lose one to win one. And it's probably true of other sports as well, where that experience of not winning helps you then know what is the difference between getting over the line and what isn't. And obviously you can point to Leicester and go, what experience have any of those players ever had of any sort of success whatsoever? But I think that's a freak occurrence, and I don't think that's disrespectful to say to Leicester whatsoever.
No, it's not.
I think what they've done, hands down, is remarkable and fantastic, and to do it over the course of a league season is unprecedented. But I'll never say it's a fairy tale, by the way. I think it's a fantastic sporting achievement, but to call it a fairy tale, I think is ridiculous.
And it's patronising as well, really, ultimately.
Yeah, but again, I'm happy for Claudio Ranieri. I'm happy for Wes Morgan. You know, the rest of their players, I can very much take or leave. But it's, you know, as if you take it in purely sporting context, it's remarkable.
Yeah.
And I think the sort of the wind that had reached their sails at some point, I think it would have been so unlikely that they failed when they got to the point that they kept on getting there. I don't think it's luck. I don't want to discount their achievement whatsoever, because, you know, there's no value to being bitter whatsoever. You're cutting off your nose to spite your face at that point.
I mean, I'm like you said, I'm delighted for Ranieri. He's the main guy. Like I've always had a soft spot for Ranieri.
This morning, even in his press conference, he's got everyone on the champagne. He's got a glass himself.
Yeah,
he's, you know, he seems like a good guy. He's been, you know, and yeah, he doesn't seem like a dick. He doesn't seem like someone that you can spite at all. And
even if behind closed doors, he probably is like racist and homophobic and stuff, you know. But whatever, he's Italian,
fan.
You know, like he's. But I think, and this isn't bitterness, and this isn't, and I agree with everything you've said. I think Leicester City story is great. I don't agree with the fairy tale crap. I definitely don't agree with all this shite I've seen on the BBC the past few days about Leicester now being the sporting capital of Great Britain, because I think...
Oh, no, people do get a bit carried away.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? Like, come on, do me a favour. Like, you know, they're getting out all these sound bites of, like, we're a one-club city, you don't get blah, blah, fuck off, you know, come off it. But the thing I will say, and I think this is a fair point to make, I don't think it makes me a bitter Tottenham fan or anything like this, but the run we've had, so when people have actually started to take Tottenham seriously... and again, take nothing away from Leicester. They've come up against every challenge and they've met it head on. And when people have said they're going to fall, so, you know, without Vardy, people thought they were going to fall and they didn't, you know, they went ahead and did it. But at the same time, I do not honestly feel our season is comparable to theirs. If we're talking about a kind of fair marker of, you know, where they've done it, we haven't. Well, I would argue on that. We've played a lot more games. Okay, you know, it's we like being in Europe, but I've enjoyed the cup runs. But I'm not going to say ever that I don't want us to be in Europe, because I've spoken at length about how much I love being in European competition. But that does add additional stress to the players. So there is the fatigue factor. And also, Leicester don't have any fucking derbies to play, whereas we're pushing for a title and we have had to play three teams that utterly, utterly despise us, that have, and as we've seen in those three games, have gone above and beyond to do anything within their means to stop Tottenham from winning the league and from at least getting anywhere close to it. And that's not something Leicester have had to come up against. I know people can argue that, you know, oh, there might be this air of, you know, oh, Leicester aren't going to come here, this small club, and show us, you know, who's boss. But I'm sorry, like, you look at kind of some of the performances that have come in against us. That Swansea performance, they basically lubed up, finished, made him a cup of tea, and then gave him a back rub after, you know.
At the same time, though, you could argue that Stoke had done very much the same for us a few days beforehand.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But I think, you know, take the other games out of context. If we're just looking on the basis of, like, the London derbies...
I do think it's probably... Yeah, I do understand what you're saying. There are probably harder fixtures for Tottenham to play than Leicester.
There are intangible factors, essentially.
Which sounds ridiculous.
It does, obviously, and it sounds like a straw man. But
for anyone to think it's okay to lose to Leicester is, you know, at the start of the season was, you know, unthinkable.
Yeah.
But if we concentrate on ourselves a bit more, that West Brom game again, this whole bottling thing and everything, I think we've put that to bed. I mean, I don't think you can bottle something that you haven't been in a position to win. I mean, weren't Arsenal top at the turn of the new year, like in 2016, they've been top of the league or something like that?
Yeah,
I'd be more worried about
putting a few stinkers. That Southampton game stands out. You know?
Yeah, I'd be more worried if I was an Arsenal fan that had been top at some point and is now looking at a possible fourth place finish again. That's slightly more, you know, worrying. But again, not to, you know, concentrate on anyone else too much. The Chelsea game, if we move on to that affair, I mean, the build-up to it was sort of... Nobody apart from Tottenham fans wanted us to win that match. I mean, perhaps there was a couple of, you know, Midlands teams, maybe Coventry and the like, who have some sort of dislike for Leicester, I'm not entirely aware. But you'd imagine they do, being in the same sort of area that had been behind Tottenham. I know a couple of my mates as well had been very complimentary about how we'd played and stuff. And you know, there was an understanding, I think, that while Tottenham were the best team in the league, for Leicester to win it, it was the best story. And I think that's a very clear distinction to make. And again, that's not taking anything away from Leicester at all. You literally, I don't think, even if we sat here now and went, oh, it's a fluke that Leicester have won it. I can't believe they've done it. Everyone's laid down. The referees have given it. It was a perfect storm. If I was a Leicester fan, I wouldn't give a fuck. It would make me even happier that people would say that. So there's no merit whatsoever in trying to take away from their achievement. Because at the end of the day, Wes Morgan's going to pick up that trophy in a couple of weeks' time, and you'll never be able to take that away from him. I mean, if we're talking about Leicester fans, one of the ones I know most closely, my friend Alex, he actually, we're in a group together, and he sent our group a text sort of 10, 15 minutes after it happened. He said, lads, if you come meet me in town, I'll buy you a glass of champagne. That's where I'm heading. And he actually went out of his way after that because I said, well done. And he goes, you know what, mate, congratulations to you and your boys too. It's been an absolute pleasure ripping the arse out of the Premier League this year, the both of us. And there was even an appreciation from him that, that you know, we've contributed to this season. And I don't think there's anyone that can detract from that. I mean, knowing Alex, I know he's not the biggest Tottenham fan in the world. You know, Leicester do have that weird dislike for us after the Harry Kane thing, which I can't seem to get my head around.
I think it's also something from their League Cup final as well. There's a lot of ill feeling after that one.
Yeah, there's a weird rivalry there that I've never fully understood. I mean, they've taken great pleasure in beating us, and I know that's got a few people's backs up, the fact that they've been so happy to sort of beat us. And I think celebrating the league, there were some people in Leicester City Centre singing, what, 2-0 and you fucked it up? I mean, that'd be the last thing on my mind if I
didn't win the league title.
But again, I mean, they've no idea how to celebrate that. And I imagine we'd have done much the same because we'd had no precedent with which to do that. Anyhow, the Chelsea game, we started fantastically. It was built up as, you know, win and essentially delay the inevitable or put more pressure on them. But given that Leicester had, you know, this absolute shambles of an Everton team to play at home with their clackers and then going away to Chelsea, who I think would have been passing the ball into their own goal if there's any chance of Tottenham beating them to the title. I think it was a foregone conclusion by that point. I think the Leicester game perhaps was a major stumbling block. Again, not the West Brom game, yeah. The Arsenal game was, again, one that we probably should have seen out, and getting something out of West Ham would have been better as well. But there's, you know, all the benefit of hindsight. You don't want to start going back all the way to the start of the season and rewriting every wrong that's gone across.
No.
You never learn anything doing that. But yeah, we started fantastically, went 2-0 up, two absolutely fantastic goals. Eric Lamella's ball through to Harry Kane. They were both beautifully intelligent during that. I mean, both me and my old man were pissing ourselves because we're like, oh, he's a mile offside. How's he given that? And then you see the replay and they've both judged it to perfection and he's danced
spectacular,
around.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, danced around the keeper, put it in, and he looked no pressure on him whatsoever. And then Eriksen, similar, slips through Son. He had three balls to choose from and he played the right one in the most perfect manner. And Son's finish, you know, it's a bit of a scuff, but you don't complain when he puts it in the bottom corner. And it seemed happy going. There was a bit of a flare-up, I think, in the first half at some points. I mean, we're still getting a bit naughty. I thought Kyle Walker was going to get sent off because he'd already had his little kick out at Pedro, I think, and he'd gone flying into someone else on the touchline. And then second half, Gary Cahill scored in a very scrappy goal. I think Toby Alderweireld didn't, you know, cover himself in too much glory there, just as he did for the Eden Hazard one as well. And the game sort of got away from us, and rather than going down in a sort of Manchester City fashion and just sort of passing our way out and feeling sorry for ourselves, they kicked the fuck out of Chelsea. And I think that's the story out of that game. I mean, sort of losing the lead as we did was perhaps down to the fact that this Chelsea team aren't bad. That's the best football they've played all season because they were so passionate about stopping us, and they've had that performance in them all season, but they've not had the level of dedication or care to actually show that to their fans. And if I was their fans, I would have genuinely been asking where the fuck has that been for the entire season.
Do you know what? Like, what a fucking joke of a fan base, mate. A genuine fucking... What a confused bunch of cunts they really are. Like... You know, you've got on one hand they fucking Lord Mourinho, the man that's been openly so disrespectful to Ranieri. Then they're holding up Ranieri placards. You've got them fucking cheering the fact that we're shit, but then they're happy to be drawing against us, yeah, to be coming back from us being 2-0 up away from home on their turf. They're cheering on a load of fucking players that they were booing at the start of the season because they weren't showing any desire, any commitment at all, who subsequently haven't really done since that point either, and now have just shown up in one game. You got Eden Hazard, who was, you know, still, in my opinion, not the best player in the league last year. Harry Kane was, but, you know, I'm biased. But Eden Hazard, the second best player in the Premier League last year, by a considerable distance, absolutely fantastic, who has shown to be an absolute twat this year in terms of, like, the regard, as I was saying earlier, for his own talent and for the club that are paying him. You know, he's not shown any commitment whatsoever to them, to their shirt, anything like that. You know, I mean, Jan Vertonghen, let's be honest, like, the shit he still gets from Spurs fans. He's one of our best players, so I don't buy this idea that, you know,
We've had arguments in the past about the Vertonghen thing. You know, we'd do just the same.
I don't think we would, and I don't think a lot of fan bases would, but, you know, they're happy to cheer on the fact that Eden Hazard is... And it's also, like, the thing that irritated me about it is like, it's a surprise that Eden Hazard is really talented. Like, he came on and, yeah, he fucking bossed us. He bossed the game the second he came on because, funnily enough, he's a world-class footballer. He's absolutely immense.
Why look, when he actually puts in an ounce of effort, he's very good at doing what he does.
Precisely. Why is that a fucking surprise? Why are you all cheering about that? Do you know, it's... Well, I know why you're cheering about it, because he scored a fucking clinker against us. But I don't know. That's what I threw a fucking wobbly about the other night, was more to the fact that I didn't mind that Leicester won the league. Like you said, I'd reconciled that. Like, they were going to beat Everton. And if not, they were probably going to either beat or draw Chelsea. It was gone. The league was gone. But it was more just them having any kind of sense or any kind of feeling that they had somehow stopped Spurs once again from enjoying something, enjoying a little bit of kind of success. You know, it's twofold. Not only winning away at Stamford Bridge, which would have been a nice kind of monkey to get off our back, but also the fact that, you know, it would have then put the league at least back into Leicester's own hands, as opposed to us just kind of giving it to them. It would have been, and I think it would have probably overall, I'm sure actually they don't give a fuck, but in a kind of perfect sense, it probably would have been nicer for them to actually win the league themselves, you know, so to beat Everton.
I think the workplaces of Leicester on that Tuesday morning would have been happier if we won that match.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so that was irritating, but from the whole, like, family stuff, the only thing I really condone from that is I know we've spoken about this, but it's like Dembele's. I don't think Dembele's kind of off-ball face-raking really has any place.
Off-ball face-raking.
Yeah, you know, like, any sort of face. I don't think you can.
If it was on the ball, it's fine, mate.
Yeah.
If he's one possession, rake his both of his eyes.
That's a proper face-raking. Yeah. The other one's just cowardly. No, but I mean, like... Yeah, I did. I fucking hate Diego Costa. If it was going to happen to any of them, someone like Diego Costa getting one is perfect. Yeah. But, that's why I hate Diego Costa, because he does that type of shit. And I don't really want to see our lads do it. And also, you know, we are an inexperienced side, so on and so forth, but Dembele isn't. You know, Dembele's a seasoned veteran, if you like, even though he's still young, member of our squad that shouldn't really be doing that. The rest of the lads, fuck it. If they can fucking leave one on a Chelsea player, do it. I mean, if, again, like, people were talking about Dyer's tackles, none of them looked like they were... He wasn't going out to... Yeah, he wasn't going out to break legs. Tackles.
But no, he was making sure that they felt them, though.
Precisely, yeah. But they weren't, you know, they weren't Charlie Adam tackles. They weren't knee-high.
I'm not sure. If that had been Charlie Adam against us, I think we would have been...
yeah.
More annoyed.
We'll glaze over that.
But the thing is, the thing that the only difference I would make there is that when it is somebody like Charlie Adam against Tottenham, he very rarely has anything to be playing for or anything to be angry about. It usually comes on in, like, the 75th minute in a match that's already determined and then just kicks someone for no apparent reason whatsoever, and other than his own sort of wanting to have Armageddon on Tottenham. But with Eric Dier, he's just come to terms with the fact that he's not going to win the league title. He's just come to terms with the fact that Chelsea put in their best performance of the season because they want to spite us. And he's gone, you know what, fuck these, I'm going to make sure you felt it. And I have no problem with that whatsoever, especially if you watch Manchester City limp their way out of the Champions League at the Bernabeu last night when they only needed one goal and they didn't get one shot on target for the entire match. If they're not raining down hellfire with studs up with minutes to go, what's the point of even turning up? I mean, we don't want violence in the game. Well, I say we don't. I personally enjoy them. I'd like to see them fight. you know, you've got to have a bit of understanding the situation they're in. Anyway, Jack, fresh from his shift at Cafe Nero, Seb's here.
Oh, Jesus Christ, is he here?
Yeah, he's left right his pinny here at the side. How are you
doing, that's serious YOLO, that is. YOLO.
YOLO.
I've gone proper Yada there. I'm messing up all my web acronyms a lot.
Oh dear. I'm fine. There's some refurb going on in the flat above me, so I'm working in Cafe Nero during the days at the moment. Taking my iPad mobile.
Have you actually just been chased out of a bedroom by a husband coming home from work? You're wrapped up in a curtain at the moment.
It's 20 to 3, mate. She's just gone on the school run.
Ah, this is a bad decision, wasn't it?
Anyway.
Still out there.
To talk to Seb, less about your philandering ways.
Yeah, I've obviously been listening. And
we've covered West Brom. We've covered the fact that we didn't bottle anything. We've spoken about Chelsea.
I'm just filling you in. I've been listening for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, I know I added you into the conversation, mate. I know it worked.
Jack was full flow. I didn't want to interrupt. So the kicking is the kicking, and you guys have covered that. I don't believe a lot of the Chelsea fans were as bothered as they made out by drawing with us. I thought it was kind of as with Arsenal, it's kind of a thoroughly contrived response. It's a way of redirecting sort of attention away from what their team haven't been able to do. Because I thought watching them, Chelsea on Monday reminded me of mid-90s West Ham in the sense that they cheat their fans. In that, I was talking to a Chelsea sporting friend of mine a couple of days ago, and it's all very well turning up in rivalry games and derbies, but ultimately, where are you in the other 37 game? And it was very much like that. I just, Jack hit the nail on the head with a kind of Eden Hazard's effort and his sort of, you know,
it's
his,
like somebody living in a mobile home laughing at somebody's mansion, but
it is.
Look at your own house first before you fucking take stock of someone else's.
I hope it's still fucking funny when you're watching us playing the Champions League. Because that's the thing, isn't it? You Chelsea are a club with an enormous financial advantage over almost everybody, and if my club was in that position, if my club was finishing quite literally mid-table, I'd be too ashamed to say a fucking thing.
Behind Leicester City and Tottenham Hotspur, who were shit, apparently. You know,
it's not even behind Leicester City, Jack. It's behind Stoke. It's behind Southampton. It's almost level on points with Everton. I mean, come on, grow up, boys. Just worry about your own house.
Just to go back to this as well, the kicking and the fighting and stuff.
We had a slight disagreement about this because I...
Well, no, it was.
They just realised that you've escaped, Jack.
No, they're after. Yeah. It's more so like we got shit housed a lot off the ball. I think like the title stuff comes into it. But Ivanovic, Fabregas, and Costa in particular, the amount of times off the ball
Fabregas
they were.
Especially.
Yeah, on Kane, on Lamella, on Eriksen, really fucking like holding on to them. Like, I think Clattenburg was in a... He's very easy to, like, have a dig at because he's a twat. But I think he reffed it reasonably well that game. And he was
hard
kind
game
of
to referee, though.
Very hard game to referee.
He could have either done it in the manner he did, where he sort of went, okay, there is a different base level of what is a foul and what isn't in this encounter.
I'm just going to pretend I'm not seeing any of this.
Yeah, or he could have sent off half of both teams. And finish as a fucking five-a-side game.
Yeah, but, you know, so like you're saying, you know, we've lost the title. We've got all these sneering tossers that have been volunteering these kind of their thoughts all fucking week about how they can't wait to stop Tottenham and they're going to celebrate, like it masks their own fucking inefficiencies for this season. And, you know, you can imagine players like Dyer have just thought, you know what, I've just seen this little cunt fucking kicking my mates for 90 minutes. He's been laughing in my face for 90 minutes. He's been fucking laughing in the press for 90 minutes. I don't give a shit, actually. I'm going to fucking boot him.
I don't have a problem with any of Dyer's tang. Like Jack said, the only thing I had a problem with actually was the Dembele moment and maybe the Ryan Mason challenge right at the end. But I, Fabregas, Cesc Fabregas is a kind of, is an underappreciated. Good, isn't he, Jack? What is happening in the background?
Mate, I'm out and about. I'm out and about. Hang on. Let me mute myself.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Cesc Fabregas is kind of under, he sort of flies under the radar as a sort of, like a limp hatchet man. I mean, because he's one of those sort of snide players that doesn't like anything sort of face to face. He's a pizza throwing, apparently genital grabbing.
Cesc Fabregas is the reason why I think they should let them fight because he's able to get away with what he does because he's well aware that there's not going to be any consequence. He knows that nothing's going to happen to him. I think if you let them have 30 seconds of a scrap and someone chins him once, he's never going to want any of it again.
As you can imagine it in the tunnel, can't you? Sort of going up and like, you know, having a bit of a fiddle with Eric Lamella before then running and hiding behind Nemanja Matic or John Terry.
He's that kind of player. Yeah. Like you were saying in your article,
serve the tackle that you get from a front player like Eric Dyer, because I don't like seeing our players put other professionals at risk. But when the kind of things that have happened, when the kind of things that happened in that game have been going on, sorry, fair play. Go
like,
for him.
Eric Lamella, he might have silly haircuts and he might be kind of like skinny in that. But he, like you said in your piece, this is a man that's experienced like the fucking Bombonera as a River Plate player. You know, he's had fucking balaclavaed ultras.
Lamella is getting intimidated by sort of the recruitment consultants at Stamford Bridge.
No, he didn't give a shit.
The Foxton agents. Yeah, exactly. I don't.
The point that I made in something I wrote is that
I'm still furious. By the way, 4 days later,
the point that I made in something I wrote was that Tottenham have been seen as this, you know, weak-willed sort of pushover side that can be bullied, and you know we've done a lot.
I read your piece. Yeah,
we've done a lot to discount that this season with sort of the way we've defended, the way that you know players like Lamella and Dyer aren't scared of sort of testing the boundaries of a yellow card. At points in a game just to sort of assert themselves. But in most winning sides, there is a level of sort of bastardry and dickheadishness.
There's a general belligerence.
That exists in it that gives, it's not done to be sort of malicious, it's done to give a competitive advantage. I mean, we celebrate it in what Atletico Madrid are doing. We've celebrated in the past with things that Mourinho's done with his teams, especially at Inter. It's a way of sort of imposing yourself on a match in a manner that Tottenham have not been synonymous with in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think because it's the first time we've ever tried doing it, we may have overstepped the boundary and we're not being as good at it as we think we were. I mean, there's probably slyer ways of doing it, cleverer ways of going about having it. I think Diego Costa's a sorcerer in the dark arts. He's perfectly well aware of how to do those sorts of things and almost get away with them. Luis Suarez does a similar thing, and you hate to see it in other players that aren't on your team, but at the same time, there's a correlation between that occurring and
their success. And that doesn't mean that I want Tottenham to trade in their fantastic football and the way in which we play and the sort of the style and the glory and the glamour of the identity of the club.
No.
But if we somehow take elements of what happened against Chelsea, add it to the backbone that we've developed, and make sure that in some matches, over the course of a season, you're going to have some games where they're played in an open and honest manner, and they're going to be a game of football. It's going to be purely, you know, decided on who's the better footballers and what happens on the day. And we saw that against Manchester City, for example. There was no needle in that game whatsoever.
Hasn't really been any needle in any of our games. I mean, there's a little bit against Arsenal.
If you look at where we've stumbled, it's been against West Brom at home because they're a more physical side. I don't want to sort of sound bitter.
I don't think we played that well against West Brom. I mean they are physical, and you're quite right. But
West Ham away, where there was obviously all that narrative and all that. Given it was their last game, it was more intimidating environment or what have you. But if those games that aren't decided purely on attacking talent, where there's variables and there's intangibles there, it's more of, if you're going to reduce it to cliche, it's more of an arm wrestle than a football match. You need to be able to win those matches as well. And I think that's what we're developing, because we used to be in the past a team that would shrink from that.
I'll tell you, at this juncture, lads, it's
really freaking
direct...
me out that you come out of nowhere.
there's a direct and exact comparison to be made here. If we look at the manner in which we went down under Sherwood 3-0 to Chelsea away, I would much rather go down in this way than in that way. And I know there's an in-between, but I don't want to look back on our team having played against Chelsea and seen them fucking give up the way they did at Stamford Bridge that night. And, fucking whatever we say about Sherwood, he was fucking, he wasn't right to do it in public. But the sentiment he was at least projecting after that match was spot on. That fucking
he was
team.
The cause and effect of that situation occurring.
And it was also like broken clocks, I mean, your point is absolutely right. I just think that also, bit of context, a couple of days have gone by, title's gone, well done Leicester. And let's be honest, if we'd won that game, would we ever have trusted Everton to get anything from Leicester over the weekend? No, Everton are an appalling football team at the moment. And I think there can be some pride in saying, we still took a point away at Chelsea, a point which takes us probably beyond Arsenal this season.
And we
gave them an absolute kicking in the process. I mean, it was take the anger out and the fact that it was Chelsea and all that kind of stuff and forget the context. And it's actually a pretty good day out.
Fucking amazing. Fuck Chelsea. I fucking hate that club.
It's all sort of like, I don't believe that their players or a lot of their fans understand the rivalry that much, because it's a different club. The rivalry is based on a completely different era. A time before a lot of these people were, obviously long before most of these players were at the club, all of them. And, probably a long time before a lot of their fans were. So it's just an affectation. It's a kind of, it's a she doth protest too much type scenario. And as I say, then they enjoy watching us play in the group stages and knockout stage of the Champions League next year.
Okay. If we do sort of turn our attention to the future, and sort of next season and everything, Pochettino's come out, and I'm not sure if he's signed or not yet, but he's
come out.
Sorry,
that was a bit lad Bible, isn't it?
Sorry, I've been featured on fucking Uni Lad this week, so they've nicked my joke. So they can.
I was in the sun this morning. For God,
you were in the sun.
Yeah, what? Like one of my tweets from the game between Real Madrid and Manchester City last night is being used as a source of banter in the sun.
In print?
No, thank God. I haven't looked inside the sun, but like the first thing I woke up this morning to some American guy who follows me. He sent me a sort of a screen grab of it going, apparently this is a source of great shame in England. And I was like, what a good day this is going to be. What a strong start.
And then you had to leave for your shift at Cafe Nero.
Exactly. Make those lattes. Yeah.
I bet you're one that does the milk art in the top, aren't you? Putting love hearts in people's coffees and that. Little wink.
If I did work at Cafe Nero, I bloody would as well. Yeah. Like, I not just
he's managed to actually work his number in with the foam.
He's actually got a stencil made, so when he puts the cocoa on top of a hot chocolate, it's an actual emoji of a aubergine that's resting on top of the drink. Anyway, yeah, next season, Pochettino has you came onto the call, mate. He's fucking attending your own funeral. Pochettino's extended his contract till 2021, I think it is. Does that make sense? Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah, I've forgotten what year it was. 2021. So that's what, 5-year contract, which is 2-year extension. Reports that Christian Eriksen's going to sign up. Everyone else that's sort of major has signed up. You'd imagine Jan Vertonghen wouldn't be far away. Moussa Dembele needs a new contract if he's not got one already. And it seems as if the core of the squad is staying at least. But the question is on sort of the supporting cast. We've spoken at length about the fact that we need somebody to help Harry Kane up front. I mean, Clinton G's very raw, and although Jack wants him tattooing on his back, we're not sure of, you know, how good he's going to be. Although you'd imagine next season, if we were to bring in another striker, he'd probably get a crack in some sort of things.
But wait a second, Clinton.
You two chat amongst yourself. The doorbell's just gone.
I tell you, I've actually got to drop out as well, guys. I need to go back and do some work.
What? So I'm going to have to soliloquy? Midday.
Yeah.
Just monologue alone.
That's it. I'll look forward to listening to this in a minute, actually.
Okay. Well, I'll see you later then, mate.
Right. But I do love Clinton and G. Third season might not have panned out as we'd, not expected, but hoped a few weeks ago. But I'm still proud of the lads. So, Coventry Spurs. Bye bye, everyone.
All right. Well, this is going to be a little bit awkward until Raj comes back. But I like Clinton and G. Now, I'm going to explain why I like Clinton and G. I don't think his future is as a long-term centre forward. But in the little snippets that we've seen of him, most notably probably against Manchester City before his injury, I was impressed by how quickly he got the kind of the pressing role that every attacking midfielder has to play, or every sort of attacking wide player. And I just think that sort of with a little bit of refinement and with a proper preseason behind him, we've got a pretty good player there. I mean, I think he's arrived as advertised, in the sense that anybody that had seen him actually play in France said that he's a project player rather than a kind of off the peg star that can just be dumped into the team. I know Jack's gone and Rod still isn't back. But one of the things we've said for most of the season is
I think somebody else played knock-on the run.
Thank God you're back. Thank goodness. Mate, Jack's gone, so I was just monologuing by myself.
That's going to make it interesting. Listen, so did he say goodbye at least?
Yeah, he did. He mugged me off completely. It was just all like, right. I'm off.
What have you been monologuing about?
Clinton and G.
Okay, yeah.
So we're back now. I mean, it's good, so we can.
So I don't have to speak about Clinton at all.
No, we've done that. And all I was going to say is that I don't think, you know, our transfer activity this summer needs to be particularly dramatic. And I don't think it will either. So.
Okay. I think it's all about. I think the main cast is fine. It's the supporting cast and extras that you need to sort of build up on. I mean,
bit of depth.
Over the past couple of games, I don't think Ryan Mason's covered himself in glory. I don't think that makes him a bad footballer. I do think. Perhaps if you're going to be at the level that Tottenham are aspiring to be, then maybe he's one that you would be ruthless about and you'd allow him to go in a similar move to Andros Townsend, although not in a similar set of circumstances.
I had a lot of big, shouty opinions about how good Ryan Mason was last season, and I'd like to retract all of them.
No, I think he's very good, but I think...
No, I don't think he is. I think he's fine.
If you let me finish my thoughts, Seb. No, I think he's very good. But I think the leap that Tottenham have made as a club from last season to this has left him in the past, if you know what I'm saying.
He's
not Jamie O'Hara, he's not Dean Marnie, he's not a bad footballer. But at the level that Tottenham are now playing at compared to where we were last season, there's been a progression there that nobody was really anticipating this quickly. That may have just left him in the past. There's a decisiveness that you need from a footballer that he just doesn't appear to have. And I understand that he was very very good in the youth team and he was top scorer and all that sort of thing. But that cutting edge hasn't really translated into the top flight. I mean, He scored one or two goals. He scored a very good goal on his one of his debuts against Nottingham Forest, I think it was, at home. That long-range cracker. He scored that winner against Sunderland that he got injured in. I think injuries are a real issue for him, all things taken into account as well, because this is one of his first seasons and, you know, half his youth career was, you know, put to the side because he was permanently crocked, and he's missed quite a lot of this year for similar issues. I think Pochettino very much likes him, though, because he obviously does as he's told and gets in the right positions and tries very hard. But at some point, you maybe just need an additional bit of quality on there as well. I mean, you'd maybe want to see if over the course of pre-season, if he has the ability to improve. But that's an area in which we could do better. And I mean, in an ideal world, the substitution that was made on midweek, on Monday even, not midweek, you'd have wanted Bentaleb to come on in that sort of position, because in the way that the game was being played, at the intensity and the sort of the needle that was in it, he'd be perfect for that. He'd stick a boot in, he'd get the ball forward and keep possession better, and you'd imagine
he'd almost be too perfect for that situation.
He would have come
like,
on
like,
with
can you imagine what Dele Alli might have done in that scenario as well? Yeah. I'm kind of glad he wasn't playing, just, you know.
Dele Alli would have been on the floor pummeling someone at some point.
Banned forever.
You know, like when you see a primary school fight and it's just like one kid pummeling someone else through tears. That's what Dele Alli would have been. Especially after he saw Eric Dier get so worked up. Those two would have been, you know, on the warpath together.
Band of brothers, those two.
Yeah, I love it. But yeah, Bentaleb's a concern. You want to make sure that either he goes because he no longer has a relationship with the club that he ought to, or you want to repair that, because the boy's what, 20, 21 years old, and I don't think he's really put a foot wrong. He's had some bad performances recently, but I think that's been an offshoot of sort of how uncertain he feels of his position and sort of, you know, his standing in the team. I think he has a lot to contribute, and he would be a perfect person to play when Dembele isn't there. I mean, if you want to mould a new Moussa Dembele, you've got the right parts in Nabil Bentaleb to make that player. You just need to sort of sell him on the project and keep a smile on his face, because he seems extremely temperamental. So you just need to know whether or not Pochettino's going to let that continue or not. Other than that, there aren't massive changes that need to be done. It's not a complete restructuring for the first time in years. It's not, you know, there's no real panic or anything. It's just sort of finishing the season. We need 3 points, don't we, to guarantee second place? Because I think if we go 3 points ahead, then that keeps us 3 points above Arsenal. And with
our goal difference is
worth a point.
Yeah, that's not being changed.
So we need a win essentially against Southampton or Newcastle. And I'd much rather beat Southampton this weekend and not go into Newcastle needing anything, because the way they're playing at the moment is a concern. And also the way the last game of the season decides with Arsenal of who finishes where is not a happy memory.
I think actually, mate, unless Manchester City score 10 goals in the next two games, if they beat Arsenal on Sunday, then...
have they got to play City?
Yeah, they're playing each other. And
happy fucking days. If City win, then we'll be...
Yeah, well, if City win, then that... we play first anyway, but if City win...
Even
then,
if City draw, as long as Arsenal don't win that football match, we're
yeah, well, we would have played before, because we're at 1:30 on Sunday. And they're at 4 o'clock, I think.
That makes me feel much better. I'd forgotten that fixture existed.
So it doesn't really... I mean, I'd expect a little bit of a drop-off over our next two games. And, you know, but I ultimately, I don't really see it mattering, I think.
I don't expect a drop-off, you know. I think...
Well, mate,
I think Pochettino is going to put a rocket up them and make them play.
Well, I expect a drop-off, because we're going to be missing Dembele of these next two games.
I don't think a drop-off in the effort levels or anything.
Oh, no, not like that. I don't expect our players to phone in. I just don't think that, you know, we've... Danny Rose...
If anything, they're probably going to try and want to prove that they're still the best team in the league after a couple of draws. And I don't think Pochettino is going to be letting them settle.
Yeah, possibly.
That may be just me being...
Well, I think actually by the time we get to Newcastle, I think I see Newcastle being safe, because Newcastle playing Villa on the weekend, and that's just like giving someone 3 points. And, you know, in this situation, I'd always kind of like Newcastle, if they win that game, they'll be 4 points clear of Sunderland. Sunderland will have a game in hand, but, you know, I don't see, I don't think either Sunderland or Norwich are good enough to catch them once they've got that 3 points, so.
That's fair enough. Okay, then.
And then we all get to laugh at Sam Allardyce getting relegated. Oh, wonderful.
Have we got anything else to cover whatsoever? I mean, we've had some questions that we ever go to see.
I don't want to talk about Southampton because
no, we don't need to. It's insignificant. It's purely about the result.
I want to go back and walk out and sit in the sun or something.
Here's one from Samuel Owens. I think we'll have probably answered this already, but do you think Pochettino would have given an angry team talk after Monday or encourage and get the players to learn from it? I think it's probably the latter, isn't it? I think if there's any man in the world that would have been happy to see his team kick the fuck out of somebody else in defeat, it's him.
I mean, to be honest with you, if you're a manager, what would be the point in an angry team talk after that? You know, with everyone all riled up, I think in the days afterwards, like, he might sort of say, well, it's okay to have enforcers, but we can't have 8 enforcers on the pitch at the same time.
Nine yellow cards.
Record? And even Michel Vorm got involved. You know, he comes off the bench swinging at players. And
I was so proud of them. I mean, I'm not. I had some people sort of after the game coming up, I don't want to see us lose our class and things like this. It's like, have you ever been sort of, do you remember when you were, you know, they're my age essentially, and you know what I'm like on FIFA if I conceded.
Yeah.
If we were sat in the same room, Seb, I'd be putting 2 fucking feet through you. Yep. So the fact that that's happened to them on a proper football field against people who clearly hate them, I am completely on a wavelength with them. And I took great pride and great pleasure in the fact that they took their frustrations out on the other team in a competitive manner because I think
what's been overlooked, Raj, is that some of it was quite provoked, not just because of the scenario, not just because we were losing it, but the behaviour of some of those Chelsea players wasn't great. And it's kind of, that's being glossed over.
That's the thing, though. Tottenham aren't the team who wouldn't have clapped back. We would have taken it before. And the fact that we did not take it lying down, we stood up for our own. And we, you know, there was no stepping back from us. We've made it clear to other teams now who think it's a game plan to step to Tottenham that they're going to be getting something back in return. And I think that discourages teams from trying to get physical with us, because at the end of the day, nobody wants Eric Dier going through.
Yeah, there is a bit of that, yeah, of course. But I mean, I just think also, if you look at Cesc Fabregas's reaction to when Eric Lamela stands on his on his hand. I mean, that's kind of like Lamela. I don't know whether Lamela meant. I'm inclined to think he probably did.
Of course he did. He changed direction.
Yeah, he probably did. Walk on his but own. If you look at, I mean, Fabregas is it rolls around as if his hand has been amputated, and he's in absolute agony for about 5 seconds. Then he's up in the linesman's face instantly, showing him his hand and showing him the stub mark on his hand. Then he's in the referees. And there comes a point in which you just think, all right, the pathetic level that I played, I remember what it was like when you had someone like that on the pitch. And you just thought, fuck you. And then everything else beyond that is kind of, well, you deserve it. And
you go and stick an elbow in later on and you get him back. And you.
I was more a studs man than an elbow man. But
I played rugby, though. I played proper sport.
Yeah,
you don't use your studs. You're saying
football's not proper sport.
Let's
get yourself a little bit of a hole there.
let's leave that conversation for another time, Seb. I don't want my real opinions of football to come out.
No, okay.
But yeah, we've had no questions that are really worth answering other than that.
Should we kill it? Because
just under an hour.
Oh, perfect. All right, cool.
Me and Jack had a good sort of half an hour before you came home.
Okay.
But yeah, I think the overall tone of what we're trying to say and everything, I mean...
really proud of the season. Wonderful. It's one of my favourite seasons of my lifetime, comfortably.
There's obviously immediate disappointment, I think, more after the West Brom game than the Chelsea one. I think I was defiantly proud after Chelsea won, and especially with all the sort of the Leicester celebrations as well. It wasn't disappointment, it was perhaps resignation, but there was no... I don't feel as if we've bottled anything, and I can't sort of stress that enough.
We haven't bottled anything. I mean, I hate that. We haven't bottled anything. I mean, we just we came up short, you know.
I've refrained from saying, and because I think people get really bored when I speak about rugby, especially now that I've openly said it's a better sport than football. The thing that this reminds me of the most, the sort of getting so close and then the disappointment of it and the age of the team and everything, is the Rhinos in 2003. It was the first season that Sinfield were captain at 22. It was, you know, there was a young core there. Danny Maguire had only just started playing. They got to a Challenge Cup final and lost, you know, unlawfully against Bradford. And I'll carry on saying that for the rest of my life. I've still not got over it.
When I said let's finish it, I didn't mean launch into a Rhino's retrospective.
The other one is they went out of one of the first rounds of the playoffs that year when, you know, people were expecting them to do much better because they, you know, they performed better in the league. And the next year in 2004, they won the lot. They finished top of the league. They won the grand final, and it was because they had that experience of losing the year before, and it was because they knew what it was like to get close, and they had the fuel of disappointment. And there's Rory Smith wrote a very good article about this today. I mean, I think you probably just say there's a Rory Smith article rather than saying it's a very good Rory Smith article. Isn't that? Yeah. Let's take that as read. But he wrote about the fact how teams react to losing and how, you know, the second place team reacts to just missing out. And, you know, he gave the very good example of Liverpool just recently when they finished second. But obviously they had the mitigating factors of the fact that, you know, Daniel Sturridge was injured and Luis Suarez left, and, you know, they had a broken and crap Steven Gerrard as their sort of backbone of that team. And, you know, it's about how you react, really. And you can go one or two ways. You can have that sulky season where you completely fall off and you wallow in your own misgivings from the year before, or you take that as a lesson and you kick on. And I don't think with a manager like Pochettino, he's going to allow them to be disappointed in themselves or to, you know, feel sorry for themselves for too long. And that gives me a lot of excitement for next year. I mean, back in the Champions League, hopefully automatically.
No, that's guaranteed, mate. We are back in Champions League.
We are top three, yeah. Cracking. It'll just be, you know, it's going
to
be a good year.
Little Chelsea fans skipping through the Sky channels trying to find what time their game is on in the Champions League. Not this year, boys. Sorry.
Yeah, but
hope it's still funny. Hope you're still laughing. At Spurs,
we're trying not to be bitter, Seb.
Absolute fucking bastards. No, it's not bitterness. It's just it's more of a kind of aggressive fuck offness, actually.
Mm. Yeah. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, we're in the best shape we've been in years, and it's just about building on that now and kicking on and seeing what happens next year, because you never know. Guardiola at City, we don't know if that's gonna take off straight away. The same, he may win the league by
April. Like that's one of those things, isn't it? It's just,
you know,
like,
we don't know how well Conte is going to do at Chelsea. We don't know if Mourinho's going to beat United. There's all these invariables there, and we don't know if Wenger's still going to be at Arsenal. That's a serious question. It's going to be interesting next year, but there's no reason why the fact that we now have over everyone else the advantage of consistency and a basis that nobody else really has other than ourselves and Leicester. But as I said this to Jack before, I mean, if you call what Leicester have done a freak season or anything, I don't think there's any malice in that whatsoever. I think that's an honest appraisal of what's happened, and I don't think that detracts from their achievement, and I wouldn't ever seek to detract from their achievement, because it's ridiculous and remarkable and all of that sort of business, but it's still a freak occurrence. There's no other way of slicing it, is there?
No.
But we'll see. I mean, it could have been far more depressing than it is. And it's more hope than sadness, I think, that I end the season with. Is that something you concur with?
Yeah, I've had a great, great time. Like I said this when we recorded last time, like some of the memories from the season I'll carry forever. Like the atmosphere in that Stoke game was brilliant. You know, just the actual atmosphere between fans. Like when you run into fans in real life, and it's just been great fun being Spurs this year. And that's what football's about. Like, okay, I would have loved a championship, but you don't forget stuff like this. And I'm just incredibly grateful to the team for that.
I think I would have been more hurt had I not come out with the appreciation that this is a team that will challenge again.
Yeah, but it's a team that will challenge again, but also a team that you can really get behind.
Yeah.
It's not just sort of...
And the club have been so good about it as well. The club have... The way the club have handled the whole situation, they've not appeared to sort of throw their toys out of the pram. Levy's doubled down on all of his investments in the squad. He's tied up all of the main parts, and Pochettino as well. So it's... For the first time, I think we've got some sort of a belief in what we're doing. And
it's continuity, Raj, as
well. And everyone's bought into it. I mean, continuity fact that it's...
It's not...
It's invaluable.
This is not an anomalous season. You know, we may not finish second next season, but, you know, God, that's going to be a lot of fun too. And I was actually talking to Jack really early this morning and saying... You know, the first time in years, I've really got my enthusiasm back to go to games, and not just like White Hart Lane, but like to travel and stuff. And that's not.
You won't be going to Stoke again in a hurry, though.
No, I took Stoke off the list. That's pretty. I wanted to see it. I'd never been, and I've seen it now, so that's good enough. But like, that's not about me. That's just about kind of wanting to be close to this team, and that's the best. That is what the kind of that Sherwood year took away, and And what you the know, kind
the,
of like
the further away we get play. From that show, would you? The more I sort of value how down it got me, because it's almost like we
it's
needed
complete opposite of this, because it's helped me appreciate this a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. It's knowing how shit it can be.
I like our players. I love our manager, and I'm even quite well inclined towards Daniel Levy now.
It's like when you see a celebrity who's been a celebrity for their entire life, and then you see a celebrity who's sort of running to success in like their 30s or 40s, and you see their different appreciation of the wealth they now have and the happiness. It's having that. It's having the perspective of knowing just how shit it can be to not enjoy your football club, and then being able to enjoy them again, even in bad times. If we'd had the season under Sherwood, it would have been... Half as can you imagine how much he would have just, you know,
how much
laid it
credit
on thick about himself?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
It's knowing that Pochettino's done none of that, and that's what I'm happy about. Even him getting, you know, he's for all his talk of being passionate away and keeping it for his wife in the bedroom, he's on the pitch fucking pushing people and getting involved and all sorts. And
I thought that was actually quite cold headed. I thought that was I thought that was just smart. He was just trying to keep Danny Rose out of trouble.
Yeah, but still.
You're not allowed on the pitch. Kind of like, no, you aren't, no, but I mean, it happens, and he was there for good intentions, and he was trying to, you know, Poch can look after himself, let's put it that way, so, or you'd imagine he could.
Can you imagine if we get Atleti in the groups next year? Him and Simeone on the touchlines and that Simeone on the pitch.
Do you see Simeone on Tuesday night?
Yeah.
Goodness me, that's going to be a ban.
I genuinely would pay good money to see sort of a charity UFC, not a box up, because I don't think either of them would have the patience to box. I think you give them light gloves and you put them in shorts and you strip them to the waist and you give them an octagon to just tear at each other in. No rules, and just see who comes out. I'm not sure who escapes from that situation.
Fun times.
That would be I think that's perhaps my dream tie. Just to see the carnage that ensues, especially if Diego Costa ends up going back there. You'd have Eric Lamella running in within 30 seconds, 2 feet off the ground, which would be a laugh.
Lamella anyway. Could break Costa in half. Lamella is one of them nastiest footballers I've ever come across. And I love it. I'd hate him if he was if he played for any other team other than ours. But I love this sort of wiry little guy with his sort of boy band haircut. Is kind of like a good looking Charlie Adams.
He's Brad Pitt in Snatch. That's who he is.
Yes.
That's what he is.
Just pulses with rage.
Yeah.
But it just has this incredibly innocent look to him.
He's very effeminate features
take
and his
that
awful
as
haircut.
Quetta. And you, yeah. Fabregas.
He could kill and live with it.
Yeah, mate. It's sort of like he's got the eyes of a great white shark. Just like expressionless. Wonderful.
Anyway,
wonderful.
Let's leave this as it was. I would apologise for us being too busy to catch up last week, but I think the way in which it's worked out, perhaps being able to digest both at the same time has maybe been a good thing for us in a perverse sort of way. At least it would have just been more of the same had we been about last week. Had Jack been in the country and both of us not been so busy, you not had so many shifts at Costa, we'd have, not Costa, Nero.
Nero, sorry.
You're not good enough to work at a Costa.
You know, there probably will be people like visiting, like people who live locally thinking that I do now actually work in Cafe Nero now.
They'll be looking out for you.
Yeah, come in. Yeah.
Mates, where, rich, give them a discount on their flat white. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. If you want to listen to old episodes, it's on the website. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, all that sort of business. We're not going to win the league, but we may do in a season or two. That's fair enough, isn't it, Seb?
It is, mate. Comedy's first.
We're in the Champions League, though. We'll win that.
The Champions League, exactly.
Can you imagine winning the Champions League next year?
Don't. This is new season content, mate. Don't ruin it.
We're going to win the we need a new sign-off, though. That's the new sign-off. We're going to win the Champions League. See you later.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.